Welcome to the Family Travel Podcast by A Big Peachy Adventure, where we help families plan their adventures, whether it's for a week, indefinite, or anywhere in between. No matter what your budget, we bring you hints and tips from the experts, inspirational stories of families who are living their dreams, as well as must-see highlights from places that we and our guests visit.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Travel Podcast. I'm Michael and joined by Natalie today. Now, most of you who know me would know that I've got a pretty keen interest in all things health and fitness. But what's often quite surprising to people is that I also don't like to give up the finer things in life. I also think that, you know, you only live once. So although I love exercise and I like to eat well, I also like to eat my favorite food and drink my favorite drinks. So today's guest, we met through the Facebook group that we run, the Keeping Fit and Healthy While Traveling Facebook group, as part of our 9-week challenge. So today's guest is Laura Dean, who is a dietitian. Now, one of the things I loved about Laura's philosophy is that her approach is that it's not about dieting. It's not about restricting yourself. It's how eating with awareness is another way which can help you meet your goals, but also enjoy life at the same time. So if you're thinking of going on a diet after one too many happy hours, this is the episode for you.
Now, before we launch into that episode, I just wanted to take a second just to tell you about an exciting little project that Michael and I have been working on. If you've been listening along or following us on Facebook, you would know that we are currently house-sitting in Darwin, taking a little break from our caravan and experiencing the wet up here. You probably don't know that we have on many occasions house-sat out our house as well. So we're getting more and more experience in that field. And what has come to our awareness, one through the interview that we had in our last episode with Karen King, who it was a great interview. If you haven't listened to it, make sure you go back and have a bit of a listen, because she has house-sat all over the world with her kids. Since that episode, I have had people contact me asking how it is that we manage to get house sits with kids. People are of the impression that there aren't home owners out there who are willing to accept a family with kids and who would always choose perhaps the grey nomads or singles over loud, sometimes messy children. On the flip side, we've had homeowners who have said, no, they're more than willing to have families in their house. In fact, they love it because they might have animals that take the extra love, or they might have toys that they enjoy seeing being played with while they're away. So that got Michael and I thinking, and we thought, wouldn't it be awesome if there was a service that linked these homeowners that want to have families in their house with families that are looking for a house sit. So we are really excited to launch our new site, Family Friendly House Sitters. And we'll link to the website in our show notes. But if you want to hop on right now, it's familyfriendlyhousesitters.com. And we also have a Facebook page by the same name. And at the moment, we are doing a huge drive to get some homeowners on board. So if you are going away over Christmas or the New Year period or any time next year, now is the time to sign up, because for the first 30 people that register, they go in the draw to win some pretty cool prizes. If you are a house sitter looking to house sit, hop on and register as well. We'd love to have you on, and we're getting excited as we see more and more people take interest in this new service and jump on board. Anyway, check it out. Let us know what you think. We love the feedback, and it's from your feedback to us that we created this initiative. So anyway, now let's launch into our episode with Laura.
Laura, welcome to the Family Travel Podcast.
So good to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Wonderful. Now, where is here for you? Where are you in your travel journey exactly at the moment?
Well, we're in Canberra, still in Canberra. We've 2 weeks ago we moved out of our home and we've put everything in storage, which was pretty hectic, as you guys and lots of people listening would know. And now we're house sitting. We're doing a bit of house sitting for a couple of months before we kick off onto the road mid-January.
Wonderful. So you're house sitting in Canberra where you guys live?
Yes. Yeah, we're house sitting here, which has been great.
So you leave, so you're off in January, and what's your plan? Are you taking off for a year or 6 months or?
Yeah, so we're set out with the initial kind of plan of 12 months, keeping it flexible. But, yeah, that's sort of our rough idea. We're going to hit the road and head south. We'll go towards Tasmania and trying to avoid the colder weather down there. But I know that lots of people talk about it being cold no matter what time of year you head down there. So we're prepared for that. But, yeah, so we'll head down there. And then at this stage, the plan is to hit to come back and then head west. But yeah, we're really flying by the seat of our pants on the plan part of things, and just kind of taking it as it comes. I think in that instance, as far as we've kind of got our kickoff date and our rough direction, and then we'll go from there.
It's all part of the fun. I know there are lots of traveling families heading over to Tassie, so shouldn't get lonely over there.
No, yeah, and I mean it's a pretty amazing spot, so lots to see. So hopefully planning to have like a month over there and really dig in and see a lot. So it should be good.
And who is us? Who's in your family?
Us. So there's myself, Laura, my husband Dave, and two little ones. We've got a 2-year-old, and our oldest will be 5 when we hit the road. So she's 4 at the moment, but yeah, she'll have her birthday just before we head off. So yes, that's us, 4.
Now, one of the things that I'm always the most interested in out of anything in these podcasts is people's stories and how they ended up getting on the road. So what was it that made you guys decide to pack it all in and put your stuff in storage and start traveling?
Yeah, so we've been we're in Canberra now, and my husband, he's from Canberra, like born and bred, and we met here. But about eight years ago, we moved to Adelaide, and no connection. We didn't know you guys over there, but just in case anyone thinks that's where we're hooked in. But we moved to Adelaide, and we were there for about 8 years and really loved it. Like, it's just such an easy place to live, a great kind of lifestyle. But all our family are in New South Wales and Canberra and on the East Coast. So we moved back when the kids were, about 12 months ago. We moved back to Canberra, and we sort of settled back into life over here. And it was kind of like a little bit of a moment, I think, where it was just like, oh, is this really, like, we want to be back here, but is this sort of, it was just that kind of moment. Like, my husband is working like long hours, and you two will probably relate, because I know this kind of has a couple of symmetries to your story, in that, my husband's working long hours, we've got little kids, and it's like, is this really how we want to be doing it? And we kind of had a conversation. I said to my husband, look, we don't have to do what everyone else does. We don't have to be stuck in that daily rut. Like, what could we do? And then on New Year's Day, actually this year, we went out for lunch, and my husband said to me, Dave, he said, what if we traveled around Australia for a year? And I paused and thought for about 2 minutes and was like, yeah, let's do it. So then from there, it was just kind of thinking about it and mulling over it and not really having a set plan. We kind of thought sometime in 2019 we'll hit the road. And then we were in a rental when we came back to Canberra, and then we found out in August that they were putting it on the market and it sold. And we kind of had to make a decision about whether we, say, took on a new 6-month lease and then maybe left a bit later, or we just kind of hustled, got it sorted and headed off. And that's the path we decided to take. So we said, okay, well, let's just do this. We'll do it a bit earlier than we planned, but it's sort of it's kind of the kick in the butt we need to get it all, kind of to not have that kind of vague, we'll head off kind of date, but to have a sort of, we're doing this kind of time frame. So then, we sort of thought, okay, well, what do we need to get done? And that's where we're at. So we just decided, let's do it. Let's do something different. Both of us love traveling, and we've always wanted to make traveling part of our life with our family. Probably in the back of our heads, we always thought it would be something a bit further down the track when the kids are bigger. But watching other people's stories now and seeing what other people are doing, hearing about people even just having babies on the road, which there are none of those kind of plans.
I don't think there ever are.
It's like, no. But it's, it's like, oh gosh, well, what are we talking about with just maybe hitting the road with two kids? We can do this. And so it's sort of like, we're keen to get into the adventure and the travel, and we'll just have the 12-month kind of goal. And I think, lots of people do that because it's just an easy kind of milestone, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We had a 12-month plan, and I don't think we're going to be back in January.
Yes.
So in the lead up to you going into the house sit and with all the travel plans, have you run into any challenges along the way?
It's been pretty good. Probably just the general stress levels are always a bit of a challenge with two small children and packing up a house and sort of figuring it out. But I don't know. I think for us it's been reasonably okay. I think we've just sort of set that goal and kind of worked towards it. We're lucky in that, you know, we haven't hit any snags. We've had family kind of pull up their sleeves and help us move. And, you know, we've got our stuff in storage at another family member's place and stuff. So everyone's been so supportive, which has been great, you know. So that's made it so much easier for us. And the kids have been really keen. So we weren't really sure, like our oldest daughter who's turns 5, she could be going into kindergarten if we were sticking around, and she loves her preschool and was really pumped about school. So we thought that could potentially be a bit of a sticking point, but she's actually really, really on board with it. She likes the idea of doing special school with mummy in the caravan. And yeah, we haven't at this stage, and but I'm thinking like perhaps we'll probably hit a few on the road, but at this stage it's all gone pretty well. Yeah, apart from the general levels of occasional moments of like, what are we doing sort of stress, it's been pretty good actually. We've been lucky in that it's all kind of gone smoothly for the most part.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, to get back to this previous comment you made about, you know, not us having the Adelaide connection, for those people who are listening, how we did connect was through our Facebook group that we have to do with keeping fit and healthy on the road while travelling. And you being a dietitian, Laura, can you tell us a little bit about the work that you've been doing and whether or not you plan to continue that on the road?
Yeah, so it was great as I've been like listening to your podcast, and then I saw you were doing the challenge, and I saw you had the Facebook page, so I sort of jumped in, and then the challenge kind of popped up, so it was good to sort of follow along. So my work, I work with people around their food, but as I suppose I would describe myself as a dietitian with a difference in that I don't work with people necessarily around what they eat so much as around their relationship with food and eating, so how they eat and why they eat and what kind of goes on behind the picture. Because as a lot of people like in the challenge and lots of people even listening would know, most of us kind of know what we should do, you know, and what are the things that make up a healthy eating plan, and what are the things that perhaps make us feel really good in our body and nourish us. But there's often a bit of a disconnect between what we know we kind of should, in inverted commas, do and what we are doing. And for me, over, I mean, I've been working as a dietitian for 15 years. And the thing that I find is the kind of missing piece is that relationship with food, the stuff that goes behind it. So that's what I've been working on. This year I've been sort of building up my business or trying to get back into business and building up services online. And the goal of that is to be able to do it while I'm on the road, of course, and running programs and, you know, virtual services to people. So in the past I've worked in health services and the real kind of, you know, traditional health model as a dietitian. But now I'm looking at how I can make this something that, one, can reach more people being virtual, but also something that's a bit more flexible for me as we travel and as we do different things.
Yeah, okay. And speaking of traveling, now you guys are about to hit the road. Actually, I'll just go back a step. Until now, what's the longest that you guys have been on holiday for?
Separately, like when I was in my early 20s, I travelled through the UK and Europe for 6.5 months. So that was pretty cool. And then Dave and I have done a few like 4-week trips here and there. But with the kids, the most we've probably done is two-week stints with the kids. Yeah, and most of that sort of, you know, travelling, seeing family and things. But yeah, that's probably our longest block of time travelling full time.
Right. And so I guess the reason I asked that is you of all people would actually have a really good perspective on this, because you've done the longer term travel and you've also gone out and done a couple of weeks. Now, I like to generally eat well. Like, my motto is everything in moderation, even moderation. But if I go to Bali for a week, that goes out the window. I'm on holiday. Now, yeah. People soon realise that once they hit the road and they're in a caravan and they are planning on 12 months, you know, they do enter holiday mode up front. And then after, you know, a month, a few months, even 6 months, they actually realise, hang on a minute, this is no big holiday. This is actually my life now. And so a lot of people tend to then think, wow, okay, I've got to do something about this. So from your point of view, would someone going on a diet be the solution?
Well, you probably know my answer already, Michael, because you've seen my information. But I would say no, don't go on a diet. Diets are diets, and for anyone listening who think, oh, I would never do a diet, but when you look for those rules and those restrictions and the kind of guidelines that are outside of yourself and outside of your body, generally what happens is they don't really last very long. You know, you can kind of white knuckle it and willpower it out for a couple of weeks or months or maybe 6 months, even if you've, you know, if you really kind of got it all sorted. At the end of the day, life happens and other things get in the way, and that relationship with food really gets in the way. So generally the key that I find, or the thing that I've found that is more powerful instead of going on a diet, is actually to connect to your body. And to use that example of like when you go on holiday, like, you know, when you go on holiday for a couple of weeks or whatever it is, and you're away from your normal eating routine, you're eating more food out and about, you're not being able to, you know, prepare your own meals. Eventually you kind of get to that point where all you want is a home cooked meal. I mean, can you relate to that? Like when you're on the road or on holiday?
Absolutely. Strangely want broccoli and steamed vegetables and just cooked in my own my own kitchen.
Exactly. You want like a big stir fry or some steamed veggies or just meat and veg if you're more simple eater or whatever it might be. And that is when we connect to our body. That's kind of what the kind of messages our body gives us. When we're in that diet mindset where we're sort of like, if we've been restricting, or if we've been not even restricting as far as like not eating anything, but just like if we've been kind of thinking that we have to follow all these rules around our food, and then we get in this environment where it's kind of like holiday eating and it's like, woohoo, party time. And, you know, we get a bit excited and we're doing all this and all that. And then again, all of a sudden it's like a pendulum swing. The further you go in the kind of in your normal day-to-day of kind of, you know, trying to follow all the rules and be restrictive and like, you know, tighten the belt and crack the whip, you know, all those kind of sayings we love to throw around. And then when you get in that holiday mode, the pendulum swings all the other way and it's like fall off the wagon, party time, you know, and it's that kind of feeling of perhaps being out of control with our eating. But if we can kind of pull that pendulum in a little bit further, and instead of when we're in our normal day-to-day eating, instead of being restrictive, but say connecting to our body, so connecting to those things our body wants, like going, well, what do I feel like eating? Do I feel like eating a big stir fry? Do I feel like eating, going out for fish and chips? And often when we're in our kind of like normal daily eating, if we're in that more restrictive eating pattern, we'll go, well, I feel like fish and chips, but I shouldn't have fish and chips. I should do this, X, Y, Z. And we restrict and re-restrict, and restrict is probably a harsh word, but we try and avoid that kind of eating. And then all that happens is when we go into holiday mode is we tend to swing back in that direction a little bit harder. So rather than go on a diet, what I generally recommend for people is to actually just, you know, be in a bit more moderation, be in a bit more connection to their body, and allow that to be a guide to what your body might want. Does that sort of make sense?
I can relate to that just because it takes me back to being pregnant. And when I did listen to my body, and with Edward, all I wanted was these particular nectarines from a particular grower, and I just was like buying them all out of this fresh fruit and veg store. And then after that I went to Pawpaw, and then I was just working my way through all the fruits. So I think I can relate to that in that sense. But I'd love to know some of the steps that maybe someone, what steps they can start to do to like realign their thinking and get back into listening to their body.
Yeah, and I think the biggest sort of step, or the biggest tool that you can use in that is curiosity. So when you're interacting with food and a food rule or a food kind of, you know, something pops up in your head and you think I should or I shouldn't, that kind of black and white thinking, good and bad, all those sort of things, is just to really get curious about that and what's going on. So where's that coming from? Is that something that's a rule, that's something that somebody's told you, or that you've picked up from a diet, or, you know, where's that coming from? Like, you know, just like we're born to know when to go to the toilet and when not to go to the toilet, you know, like if you get the signal to go to the toilet, you go to the toilet. And if you don't go to the toilet, you know that there's some consequences associated with that. So that's a feedback system in our body. And food actually works exactly the same way. But for some reason, there's been all these messages that have come to us through our culture and through you know, through dieting kind of mentality, if you like, that tell us that we are actually in control of that, that we're in control of that system. And the truth is that we're kind of not. It's similar to the toilet thing in the fact that you can hold on for a certain amount of time, but eventually you're going to need to go. And when it comes to food, you can restrict and you can stop kind of that connection to your body for a certain amount of time, but eventually that will actually catch up with you. So if we can actually kind of more compare it to that rather than this thing that we should be in control of, which is kind of the story we've been told, right? And that's usually the first step for people, is to really get curious about what's going on and where those messages and where those rules come from. Do they come from a connection to your body, or do they come from outside of your body? And that's a really good first step.
Okay. And so I personally have always been the sort that, you know, if I'm craving chocolate, I'll have chocolate. If I really feel like red wine, I'll have red wine. But what I do is I think about, well, if I had that every single day, that's going to not necessarily be the greatest thing for me. Or if I'm eating really high calorie meals, one meal a day, well, maybe I just need to tone it down a little bit at the other end of the day. But I haven't really been one to restrict myself for what I eat exactly. Is it really as simple as, you know, something as the total calories in versus calories out and just paying attention to what your body's telling you?
Unfortunately, it's not. For some people, it can be as simple as that. For people who've never had a problem with their relationship for food and never had a problem with their weight, basically, for a lot of people, it's not as easy as energy in, energy out, because of all that messaging that happens around eating. And it's, you know, I mean, if we were to compare it with the whole idea of, you know, traveling on the road, for some of us, it's really easy just to go, well, just do it. Like, why not? And for a lot of people, they have all that other stuff that comes up when they think, you know, oh, I'd love to go traveling, but XYZ. And there's all this programming and information that pops up for them. And so similarly, but different, but similarly around their relationship with food, for people, for some people, it can be just as simple as, oh, yep, I let myself, like for you, Michael, as you said, let yourself have chocolate when you feel like it, let yourself have wine, red wine when you feel like it. And then just knowing intuitively, well, if I drink a bottle of red wine every night, I'm probably going to feel pretty ordinary the next morning. So I'm not going to do that. For some people though, it's just the point of view, well, I'd really like to have chocolate, but then the narrative or that kind of information around dieting starts to take over. So it's like, well, I'd really like to have chocolate, but if I have chocolate, I won't be able to stop at one piece. I'll eat the whole block. I'll keep going. Or if I have chocolate, then this will happen. Or if I have chocolate in the house, then I'll want to have it every night. And there's this, all this sort of stuff that happens around it, which it's actually the restriction of the having chocolate that causes all the problems. But for most people, they feel like it's the chocolate that's the problem, because that's the message that, you know, diet culture sends us. You know, if you look at any article in the paper, I mean, I just read this article the other today that a friend sent me around willpower and why people's willpower, you know, why, how people can help themselves have more willpower around diets. And the thing is it puts this pressure on the individual to kind of look past all that programming that they've got and to be, well, I'm the one that has to stop myself from having the chocolate. But if you've been told if you let yourself have chocolate, you'll be completely out of control, it's a different way to interact with food than what you know, for somebody who's never been on a diet, who's never had that those problems come up, you know, you can kind of regulate it in a bit more easy way, if that makes sense. But for people who've been told that messaging that they can't, and they've been told they can't trust their body, they can't trust their cues around food, the thought of allowing themselves to have chocolate can feel really scary, because they feel like, if I let myself have one, then I'll just eat the whole block, or I'll eat that whole thing. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, actually, to be honest, I can actually relate a little bit, because if I open a packet of chips, I'll eat the whole packet. And afterwards, you know, I didn't actually need the whole packet, but I ate it because it was there. And,
yep.
You know, and I think that seems to be a big thing, where whether you're on the road or not, you know, I like to have a treat, but it's the portion control, which, you know, I, as same as a lot of people, can sometimes have the issues with. Do you have any particular, you know, tips or tricks or something to help people so that way they can eat those things that they really want to eat, but not feel like they're out of control?
Yeah, definitely. There's two real good ways you can come at that. The first one is, when you are enjoying those foods, is to actually enjoy it. So, you know, every chip you eat out of the packet, maybe not everyone because you're probably distracted a bit by life, but, you know, to try and really enjoy it, to crunch, to enjoy the texture, to enjoy the flavor, to really make it a mindful eating exercise. So instead of kind of eating the chips while you're doing something else, or eating the chips while you're, you know, telling yourself in your head you shouldn't be eating the chips, sit down with the chips, whether you leave them in the packet or you pop them out in a nice bowl and sit out and have a drink with them, or just be in a space where you can really concentrate on the enjoyment of it. Because 9 times out of 10, when we eat those foods, we're going to them for enjoyment. You know, we're not going to them because we're particularly hungry, or sometimes we are, but a lot of the times it's just because they taste good and they're like you said, they're just a bit of a treat, and that's perfectly fine. So I think when we're going to food for that is, one, to acknowledge it, and then two, to kind of make that space to actually enjoy it. Because when we're connected to the enjoyment of food and we're eating it with that full awareness of how does that taste in my mouth, how does it feel in my body, you can kind of notice when that enjoyment starts to drop off, or if it does start to drop off, when you're fully engaged in it. When we're eating, like while we're watching the TV, you know, and I think that most people can relate to that situation where you're kind of eating and doing something else, and then you look down and you go, oh, where'd that packet of chips go? What happened there? Like, did someone come in and eat all those on me? You know, you sort of, you miss out on that full enjoyment of that food that you're eating. So that's the first step, is to really, when you are eating foods for enjoyment, is to actually get the enjoyment out of it and eat in a mindful way. And then the second part of it, or the second sort of step or tool you can use, is to remove the restriction mindset around it. So if when you go to eat the chips, you're telling yourself, I shouldn't eat the chips, you know, this whole self-talk, this whole kind of like conversation starts up in your head, and it's all about how you shouldn't eat the chips and what you shouldn't do, and I really shouldn't, oh, maybe I'll go get some carrot sticks first, or maybe I'll go do this first, and I'll go for a walk first, I'll try and do this, I'll have a big drink of water, I'll brush my teeth, I'll, all this kind of distraction things, because you're trying to stop yourself from eating the chips because you think you shouldn't eat the chips, is to lift that off and just kind of, because the restriction, that whole stuff will often lead us to eat more, because when eventually you, you know, you kind of cave in and you go, oh, I'm just going to do it, then it's almost that whole thought of, well, I've started now, I may as well just eat the whole bag of chips. So I think if we can remove that restriction, then that makes a big difference. Well, I know that when I've seen with, worked with clients, and that can feel a bit scary at first, but just to go, well, I really feel like chips, so I'm going to sit down, I'm going to eat the chips, I'm going to enjoy them, and then I'm going to move on. When we sort of had that judgment and that guilt around it, then it kind of just lingers. You know, we eat the chips and then we go, oh, I really shouldn't have done that, and then feel guilty about it. And for some people it can lead to that, I've done it now, I may as well just keep going, and then you eat the chips and then you eat this and that and so on and so forth. And for some people it can just lead to a really feeling ordinary about yourself. And at the end of the day, all you did was eat some chips, and really it's probably not the worst thing you can do in your day, comparatively speaking. So I think the two sort of strategies that people can approach that with is, one is to, yeah, really maximize the enjoyment, and two is to remove the guilt and the restrictive mindset away from it so that you can maximize the enjoyment.
Yes, and I think that's probably for all meals. I know I'm guilty of it as a mum. Like I sit down, I scoff down my dinner because one of the babies is crying. Like the 5-year-old is getting up from the chair and chasing lizards, which is his thing at the moment. And you know, the 7-year-old is doing whatever. So I think, like with all meals, as a mum, and I know Michael as well, occasionally you don't sit there and enjoy it. You just trying to get through it.
Yeah. And so whether it's the everyday thing or the sort of the more treat things, yeah, that mindful eating is a really important thing, because the thing with that kind of everyday eating too, Natalie, is when we miss that satisfaction from the everyday eating because we're busy, like we're thinking, oh, I've got to get this down because I've got to help the kids out or whatever, then often that can be a bit of a trigger for us looking for that kind of treat enjoyment stuff, because we haven't got the satisfaction from our meal. Like, you know, instead of being able to sit down and enjoy it and relax, and then we look for that satisfaction later on. And that can, for some, and particularly with mums and women I've worked with, often that can be a bit of a trigger for after dinner or later in the night, like once the kids are down, kind of snacking and eating, because you've kind of been almost robbed of that satisfaction and enjoyment and connection to the eating. And so then you're looking for that later, it kind of carries over. And so the more we can engage with every eating experience as something that's, yeah, worthy of sitting down as much as possible. I mean, there are times when it's just not practical, but as much as possible, enjoying and engaging with it, enjoying the textures and the tastes, and being able to get, you know, satisfaction from what we eat, it can make a big difference across our day for sure.
And it's interesting, because that direction of, if you are going to have a treat, sit there and savour the moment and actually enjoy it, actually worked for us when we were saving for this trip. So one of the things I started becoming conscious of was, hey, I'm not going to buy a coffee from a cafe just to drink a coffee and drive to work while I'm drinking it. If I'm going to have a coffee, it's going to be when I'm sitting down at a cafe with the family and actually enjoy it. And for me, that was as much of a cost-saving strategy as anything, because those $5 here and there add up. And I can imagine it's the same with, you know, chocolate. If you're scoffing down, you know, a couple of rows of chocolate, that's very different than sitting down with a glass of red wine, watching a sunset and eating it and enjoying it.
Yeah, definitely. And you get that. Yeah, I mean, it links in, because then you're getting in natural, even though the goal of it isn't to necessarily eat less, a byproduct of actually engaging and enjoying with it is eating less. And like you would have found with the coffee, if you just sort of have that rule of I'm only going to have it when I can actually sit down and engage with it and enjoy it, you found yourself drinking less coffees, because there were times when you just were like, well, I'm not going to drink it in the car on the way to work when I don't enjoy it. I'm not going to do it here and there. And similarly with food, when we stop and we go, okay, well, instead of using this, it's just kind of like a get through thing or a fill the space or just a habit, just a routine, I'm going to stop and pause and eat it when I can actually engage with it and enjoy it. And it can make a big difference, one, to the frequency of how much we eat it, even though that's not the goal of doing it, but two, mostly importantly, to actually being able to enjoy it. And I'm sure those coffees that you had, those fewer coffees, were so much more enjoyable than, and sometimes perhaps not, you know, the other thing that we really pick up when we stop and engage is we can really notice the difference between something we really enjoy and don't. So you probably found sometimes when you had a bad coffee, you were like, oh my God, what a waste of my coffee opportunity, because this coffee's crap, you know, and I've savored this and I've set this aside for this special coffee enjoyment, and it wasn't any good. And similarly with food, you know, sometimes when people get in that routine of just eating kind of treat foods on autopilot, sometimes there's foods where they don't necessarily enjoy it. I always remember this client that I had who always every day would go and have coffee and a piece of cake. And we started working about on their relationship with food. And I was just like, okay, well, let's just lift that restriction. And if you want to go out and have coffee and cake every day, then go and eat it. But eat that cake with pure enjoyment. Have every bite, enjoy it, take your time, make sure you choose the cake that you really like, and go, you know, go really into that enjoyment mode. And then a month later, this client came back to me and said, oh my God, I don't even like cake. So after a month of engaging with it to that enjoyment factor, they realized that they actually didn't enjoy eating cake. The only reason they were eating cake was because they thought they shouldn't eat cake, because cake was a food, as somebody living in a larger body, that they shouldn't be eating. And there was this whole stuff hooked up into it. And when we just took that restriction away and said, eat the cake, but please enjoy it while you do, they realized that they didn't even enjoy cake. It just shows that it's a really good story that I sometimes share, example of how we can really get in that routine of eating things because we think we shouldn't, or eating foods that have been, you know, forbidden or bad foods, or however you might want to label it, depending on the diets and things you've been on or the way you've looked at food, that when we actually engage with food and we look at that enjoyment, there's some foods that we don't necessarily enjoy that we do eat, and some foods where, yeah, if we take that restriction away, we can actually completely enjoy the foods we really like, but sometimes even just pass on the ones that we don't necessarily like and the ones we wouldn't even miss being part of our kind of our eating, you know, our eating across the week or month or whatever it might be.
I have personally lost a whole pile of weight while I've been traveling. And I don't think, or it definitely wasn't intentional. And a big part of it is having more time to actually sit down and enjoy meals. It's been the first time in a long time I used to be notorious for, you know, shoving down some food down my throat while my desk at work.
Accusing me of eating his mushroom when he'd eaten his mushroom, not even realised.
Sometimes I would literally have eaten my food and not even having realised it. So one of the things about travel is sometimes my meal choices may not necessarily be as good, in inverted commas. Actually, they're probably good because I'm enjoying them. But having that time to really enjoy the meals has actually been really good. So on that, are there any easy ways, if someone has, you know, lived the good life a little bit too well in the first, you know, 2-3 months on the road, and they want to start to get things back on track, what would be your recommendation for their first step? What should they go ahead and do?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that example is a really good one of when you slow down, and that sort of is a good segue into it, in that that connection to what you're doing and that slowing down around eating makes a big difference. Because when we eat, when we don't connect to food, we have to get satisfaction from our food somehow. We're wired physiologically to be satisfied by what we eat, because for us to still keep living, we want to keep eating. So there has to be something, some kind of payoff, some reward for us to eat. And satisfaction and enjoyment is the reward. So that's completely normal, firstly, for people to know that actually enjoying what you eat is a thing, and it should be there because that's survival for people. So when you actually aren't getting enjoyment from what you're eating because you're eating really fast, then often our bodies will get enjoyment from the amount. So when you don't get satisfaction from what you eat, then you get satisfaction from how much. So we kind of end up eating more. So the first step is to actually stop and pause and slow down. So really slow down that whole eating experience as much as you can to try and be more mindful. Now, that doesn't mean you have to sit there for 30 minutes, you know, eating your meal in a zened out state. It could just be putting your knife and fork down between mouthfuls. So if anyone's ever noticed, and perhaps this is a good exercise or a good little thing to do the next time you have a meal, notice how much you are loading your fork before you've even finished the mouthful, you know, that you're chewing on, or picking, you know, you've got the sandwich almost ready to go in the mouth before you've even swallowed. What we often do is we're already on the next bite, you know, we're loading the fork, we're moving forward with the meal before we even realize. So a really quick win or a quick practical tip is to simply put your knife and fork down or your sandwich or whatever you're eating between mouthfuls. So whenever there's food in your mouth, try not to have food or utensils in your hand. So that's a really quick one to try and slow down the eating. And yeah, that engagement with eating, that mindful eating, is probably the first big step. The second part of that is when you're starting to transition from perhaps, you know, more holiday eating back into kind of normal eating, is to really, instead of going from, you know, the holiday eating to, you know, cracking the whip on yourself and thinking, I've got to do this, is just to really kind of stop and pause and connect to what your body might be telling you around what it feels like. And I know that can feel like a little woo-woo for some people, but more just about like when you do go to plan a meal, like thinking, okay, well, and this is not always practical in every single meal to be able to like, what do I really feel like in this moment? But try to go, okay, well, try to connect to what foods are satisfying you. So you don't want to be going from eating, you know, eating in kind of holiday mode every day to eating, you know, really what you would consider boring or what you might consider less satisfying foods just because they're quote unquote healthy. So try and find a balance between the two, because it doesn't always have to be, you know, quote unquote healthy to be, you know, the choice that works for you. You can still, I think it's avoid that kind of all or nothing, that pendulum swing that we were talking about before. So if you are going to come back into more everyday eating, do it with a connection to what satisfies you, what foods you enjoy. Don't just go eating, you know, tuna salads every day. You might like tuna salads, but you know, like some people can go really to the extreme. And then what happens is then the pendulum swings back because it's like, it's not enjoyable, it's not satisfying, and it's not enough food. So the two things I do is to really enjoy every meal as much as you can, but also as you kind of come back into that normal eating, make sure that you're still eating foods that satisfy you physically, so you're eating enough food, but also foods that you really enjoy eating. You know, if you like to have a salad, then maybe, but, you know, you need to have some carbs with it or something crunchy, then chuck those in. You know, maybe have some garlic bread on the side of your salad and grilled chicken or whatever you might be having. I mean, that's a bit of a cliche meal, but just to give an example, you know, sometimes people will just go too far that other way and you're just pendulum swinging, and all you're doing is you're like getting the pendulum ready to swing back in that other direction. So the less you can do that, and the more you can make it sort of more middle of the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, getting back to the article that you mentioned before about, you know, needing to have self-control, and to me that all sounds good, but I absolutely suck when it comes to breaking habits. I like to do is I like to introduce new habits on top of the ones I'm trying to get rid of, so they eventually, the good ones eventually crowd out the bad. Now, I understand you've got a 5-day challenge coming up about, you know, connecting with your body and eating and everything. Can you tell us a little bit about that challenge?
So I run the challenge a little bit around just to give people a bit of a taste of this whole concept, because it can sound a little bit foreign for a lot of people. So it's 5 days to weight loss freedom, ditch diets and reboot your food body connection. So it's all about shifting the focus from that focus on controlling your weight, focus on controlling your food, to focusing on connecting. So it's less about me as the dietitian or someone as the doctor or whatever telling you what you should do, and more about giving you the tools to connect to what works for you, what works for your body, and know what, how you can change habits and how you can kind of move forward with that kind of healthier relationship with food, as opposed to just focusing on what we eat, focusing on, how we relate to food and how that can, help us to achieve whatever health goals we're working towards.
So on for those people who can't make the challenge, are there any other resources that you'd recommend or that you have freely available for people to get kickstarted?
Yeah, so for people who want to get a bit of an bit more information around this approach or kind of to get started, I've got a free workbook they can download or free guide. It's 4 steps to get started with eating with awareness, and that you can find that at eatwithawareness.com/4 steps, and that's for the word, so 4 steps. And that's free. People can download that, and it's some actionable steps to kind of, yeah, work towards this way of eating that's more around connecting to your physical cues and less about following the rules that are outside of your body.
That all sounds really good, and I'm sure with the new year coming up, you'll have other things that people will be able to tap into.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, got another challenge coming up in January, so stay tuned for that one. If people pop over and grab that other link, then they can sign up and they can get notified around when new things are happening.
Wonderful. So you're going to be like us, putting the kids to bed, then madly doing work at night while you're out on the road.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been running, like, you know, working on my business because I've got the kids at home with me full time at home, and I have this kind of pipe dream that I'm going to have more time to work on it on the road, but with my husband around full time. But we'll see how that actually pans out. Get back to me in a few months.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I definitely got a lot out of it. I was listening very intently to the whole thing, and I'll definitely start to sit down, enjoy my meal, and do everything with a bit more intention. But we want to wish you all the best as you finish up your house sit and get on the road. It's a very exciting time.
Yes. Yes, very keen to get on the road and just sort of have all the planning, all the logistics behind us, because, you know, once you're out on the road, then, you know, whatever you didn't get done, so you don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's exactly right.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Laura. It's been great having you, and we look forward to following your adventures.
No worries. Thanks, and I look forward to following along with your next step too.
Thank you for listening to a Big Peachy Adventure of Families Travelling Full-Time. What drives us is hearing of those we've inspired to simplify their life and take the first step towards their travelling goals. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your travelling buddies. Don't forget to click subscribe, and also please leave us a review. 5 stars hopefully, but if not, that's okay. Please leave a comment and let us know what we can do better. If you'd like to connect with us personally or have any questions, you can find us on Facebook at A Big Peachy Adventure. See you on the road and happy travels.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.